The last card, Von Braun's preposterous theory. Wernher von Braun was a proud campaigner for space exploration. Von Braun helped design the German VIN V2 rockets that attacked London. Roger Lanius of the National Air and Space Museum wrote of Braun, "But because he was also willing to build a ballistic missile for Hitler's Germany, with all of connotations that implied in the devastation and terror of World War II, many of his ideals have also been appropriately questioned. For some he was a visionary who foresaw the potential of human spaceflight, but for others he was little more than an arms merchant who developed brutal weapons of mass destruction. In reality, he seems to have been something of both. Gather round while I sing you of Wernher von Braun. A man whose allegiance is ruled by expedience. Call him a Nazi, he won't even frown. Ha, Nazi Schmeise, says Wernher von Braun. Don't say that he's hypocritical. Say rather that he's apolitical. Once the rockets are up, who cares where they come down? That's not my department, says Wernher von Braun. Some have harsh words for this man of renown. But some think our attitude should be one of gratitude. Like the widows and cripples in old London town. Who owe their large pensions to Wernher von Braun. Tom Lehrer, Wernher von Braun, 1965. Carol Rosen founded the Institute for Security and Cooperation in Outer Space, ISCOS. In 1977, Wernher von Braun urged his co-worker Carol Rosen to tell the world about the Nazi-controlled secret government in America. A large part of the NSA, CIA, and NASA were infiltrated after Project Paperclip brought over Nazi scientists to the USA at the end of World War II in 1945. These scientists established a secret order and brought hundreds of ex-Nazis into the US government. They are one of the most powerful groups in the world. They're inventing enemies, he, von Braun, said, against whom they are going to build this space-based weapon system, the first of whom was the Russians, which was existing at that time. Then there would be terrorists, then there would be third world countries, now we call them rogue nations or nations of concern. Then there would be asteroids. And then he would repeat to me over and over, and the last card, the last card, the last card would be the extraterrestrial threat. You will find that there is going to be a spin to find some enemy against whom we have to build space-based weapons, and now we should expect the spin. Dr. Carol Rosen, National Press Club, 2001. According to Dr. Stephen Greer, the person in charge of the disclosure project, by commingling fact with fiction, and by hoaxing UFO events that can look terrifying, the plan is to eventually create a new, sustainable, off-planet enemy. Wernher von Braun warned of such a hoax, as a pretext for putting war in space. By supposedly using bluebeam, three-dimensional holographic laser projections, or sufficiently advanced computer-generated imagery, CGI, technology, scheming New World Order scientists would hoodwink us into believing the extraterrestrial threat. The Islamic State's direction of their TV news videos with green screen or chroma keying and later added background made jihadists in the film appear to be more than 7 feet tall. Those particulars and the WMD sham news reports against Saddam Hussein reopened brouhaha that televised news footage of 9/11 was forged as well. 9/11 conspiracy theories like the Corbett Report are well known by now. A UFO hoax theory is starting to surface. In live TV newscasts of the 9/11 attacks, the second plane struck the South Tower at the 81st floor slab. It was seen poking through the building with its jet nose exiting undamaged, before the TV broadcast suffered an abrupt fade to blackout. Each side of the towers measured 208 feet across. How did the aircraft's nose glide uncrushed through the South Tower like a hot knife through butter? Can an aluminum and fiberglass nose cone of a plane slice through a steel and concrete building? The official account was that the plane's inertia carried aircraft remains, a dust cloud, all the way through the building. If you look closely, the plane passes into the building rather like a phantom. From that particular camera angle, the debris ejecta looked much like the nose of the plane passing all the way through the building and out the other side. However, the strange nose-out illusion was visible not merely from one specific camera angle, but from all of the different videos of the 9/11 attacks, the nose cone of the jet can clearly be seen protruding through the other side of the building in all of the news media and amateur videos. The 767 apparently penetrated the massive South Tower. A real Boeing would have begun telescoping when the nose hit the steel columns. If what seems an image of the plane's nose is actually a plume of dust and flame, why does it look just like the jet nose from every angle and on all the videos? Simon Hitton made analysis of the videos and argued that the TV broadcast news and amateur videos of 9/11 were forgeries using a shared computer-generated imagery, CGI, source code. However, it looks as if the shared source code had a hiccup or was sabotaged. The nose and synchronization mark jumped past its inward position by several pixels. The graphical sprite explosion came a split second too late, making the jet seem to plunge headfirst into a barrel of molasses. Since the computer animation exceeded the feed by 0.28 seconds, buffer overflow, a fuselage apparition of the airplane appeared to pass straight through the building before the picture blacked out or morphed into a plume of smoke. The Evan Fairbanks home video of the September 11th second plane additionally indicates that the nose-out debris apparition plainly has the same dimensions, direction, and measurable pixel count as the nose-in collision, with a piece of a whole wing piercing the South Tower right before exploding. If that is not a computer-generated video graphical sprite, facets fall outside the limits of common sense or reasonable odds. Frame enlargements of the Evan Fairbanks 9/11 home video show that not only the jet nose cone but also part of its right wing segment penetrates the entire building just before exploding. Imagine human beings seated in the cockpit. That is actually not possible. A rooftop view video clip of the 9/11 second plane collision again shows that the intact nose-out debris cloud piercing the building has very much the same proportions, outline, and pixel correlation as the nose-in collision. Those multiple coincidences are beyond the possibility of accepted observation or scientific explanation. However, CGI, computer-generated imagery, could model the same layered sprite effects. One of the NORAD drills being run on September 11, 2001, was a traditional simulated hijacking using CGI video graphics of hijacked airplanes. Who could have hacked those 9/11 video feeds? NORAD officials have acknowledged that script writers for their armed exercises included the idea of hijacked aircraft being used as weapons. Civilian and military aircraft were used as mock hijacked aircraft in the drills. Vigilant Guardian is a command post exercise, CPX, meaning that it is conducted in offices with supercomputers. What could come about if a few seconds of a NORAD computer-generated video feed were deliberately streamed into emergency TV news broadcasts? The abuse of corporate capital has always been a favorite topic of dissident journalists. For decades we listened to rather odd and capricious warnings of the unseen dangers presented to the less privileged by prosperous dynasties such as the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers. We were warned that multinational banking corporations, secret Bilderberg fraternities, and large oil companies would not hesitate to start boundless wars in order to secure more power for their greedy executives. But let's take a small preview into the future, an epoch from this moment, and consider what may happen if a brand new breed of craven entrepreneur takes over. The person we refer to in our future scenario is the wealthiest man in the world. There is no need to guess his name. He's the guy next door. Clean cut, cheery and wholesome. His rise to power was rapid and unprecedented. Not until after his damage was done did some people finally begin to seriously voice the unthinkable. But by then it was too late. His business was intelligence, of course. And the promise of social well-being and prosperity to all who bought his invention. Almost everyone bought it. Rich and poor alike used it to partake in his wonderful revolution. He was the most powerful man in the world. But it was soon discovered that he had abused his power, creating aggressive monopolies within the free market, and forcing his competitors out of work. When Congress and the White House intervened to stop his crimes, he raged against the state with fury and vowed to forcibly impeach the president. A new glove puppet would be installed, easily manipulated, an unelected president of his choice. Could Congress not understand? Washington's petty bureaucrats were nothing in his eyes. He was the wealthiest man on earth. Who could dare to rule against him? He was the most secretive man in the world. When generals of the Pentagon requested to see the inner workings of his inventions for the sake of national security, he spoke out madly in convulsions of wild and passionate anger. He vowed to establish a most sublime tyranny. More dreadful than Nero, his dictatorship would be enforced throughout the world. Were the generals all blind? Did they not fear the embodiment of his unseen power? Huxley and Orwell had written boldly of his coming. He was the most guarded man on earth. Who could dare to stand against him? He was the wealthiest man in the world. When dealers of Wall Street and world trade barons learned that courts had ruled against his crimes, they cheered. His monopoly would be broken soon, they thought, bringing untold billions into their accounts. But instead, a late summer morning changed the course of history. The world was all his. And to prove it, he secretly fought back one terrible day. 50 million tons of steel and concrete knocked down the barons of world trade who sought to take his fabled wealth. A shower of fire and brimstone crippled Pentagon generals who wanted to steal his operating secrets. On that dreadful morning, the most powerful man on earth decided to spend his time idly in bed, but an unexpected phone call moved him from a relaxed position. "What do you mean, Washington is safe?" he nervously shouted into the cipher-strength encryption handset. Congress and the White House were supposed to burn on his altar of scorn and disgrace. The most decisive aspect of his mission to punish foolish officials of public affairs who challenged his power to rule had failed. The blunder would cost him millions in legal fees. But the strike he already dealt against his victims was so swift and so devastating that the world began to see things his way. Security had now become the new buzzword, forcing the removal of constitutional rights, searches without warrants, and secret arrests without lawyers. By a perfect coincidence, he already had the necessary tools at hand to subject every citizen to restrictive controls and to closely monitor everyone with surveillance schemes of his corrupt vision. One at a time, the Brethren of Babylon bowed to the wealthiest man in the world, confirming their solemn oaths of loyalty and silence. He was the most powerful man on earth. There was no need to guess his name. He was the guy next door. Clean-cut, cheery and wholesome. And his favorite word was cool. We ain't good regalia. And our lodge was old and bare. But we knew the ancient landmarks. And we kept em to a hair. And looking on it backwards. It often strikes me thus. There ain't such things as infidels. Except, poor APS, it's us. Rudyard Kipling, The Mother Lodge, 1865-1936. In the 2 years ahead of the September 11th attacks, the North American Aerospace Defense Command conducted exercises simulating what the White House says was unthinkable at the time, hijacked airliners used as weapons to crash into targets and cause mass casualties. One of the imagined targets was the World Trade Center. In another exercise, jets performed a mock shootdown over the Atlantic Ocean of a jet supposedly laden with chemical poisons headed toward a target in the United States. In a third scenario, the target was the Pentagon, but that drill was not run after defense officials said it was unrealistic, NORAD and defense officials say. Stephen Comoro and Tom Squidieri, NORAD had drills of jets as weapons, USA Today, April 19, 2004. With increasing allegation that the 9/11 attack videos were digitally manipulated, there was also conjecture that devil faces visible in some TV news media photos were also simulated CGI images purposely layered to suggest uncanny coincidences. Realistic computer graphics are used in NORAD, North American Aerospace Defense Command, command-level drills. The exercise Operation Vigilant Guardian may have been a significant factor in the success of the 9/11 attacks. Vigilant Guardian simulated hijacked planes in the northeastern sector and started to coincide with 9/11. Key military personnel who were responsible for protecting the U.S. against the 9/11 attacks may have been seriously hindered in their ability to respond because of a large-scale air defense exercise they were participating in when the attacks occurred. Evidence indicates that the personnel, whose responsibilities included ordering fighter jets into the air to intercept the hijacked planes, were unclear about what was real-world and what was exercise. Caustically, on the day of the 2005 London 7/7 bombings, Peter Power of Visor Consultants gave interviews on BBC Radio 5 Live and ITV saying that he was working on a crisis management simulation drill, in the City of London, based on simultaneous bombs going off precisely at the railway stations where it happened this morning, when he heard that an attack was going on in real life. He described this as a coincidence. Peter Power also gave an interview to the Manchester Evening News where he spoke of an exercise involving mock broadcasts when it happened for real. After a few days he dismissed it as a spooky coincidence on Canadian TV. If spooky coincidence is the set way to explain video impressions of eerie faces and a jet nose penetrating the South Tower, so be it. The 9/11 Commission outwardly dismissed those observations as odd happenstance, although jihadists talked of supernatural help. However, the unsolved September 11th video ambiguities surely did not end there. A YouTube video appeared to show a UFO being filmed over New York from a helicopter near the World Trade Center prior to the 9/11 incident. It is one of the most viewed UFO videos online. A woman is seen in the front of the helicopter holding a camera, talking excitedly to the person behind her holding the video camera. A UFO is seen to be appearing from behind the World Trade Center. The woman points towards the UFO and it suddenly flies past the helicopter. It climbs up out of sight, appearing to leave a contrail. Isaac Coy. The video appeared on the Fox News Channel in June 2001 and has also appeared on Japanese television. The video was originally made available on the Sci-Fi Channel's website, supposedly as a video submitted by a viewer, Barbara S. of a UFO sighting on July 24, 2000. This video appears online with titles such as UFO Sighting at New York Twin Towers and WTC UFO Sighting Prior to the 9/11 Incident, Enhanced. Isaac Coy is the pen name of a barrister in England with an interest in varied issues relating to UFOs. Coy found out that the woman in the video is an actress. Her name is Barbara Sikurunza. Her entry on the IMDb website indicates she is an actress, writer, and director. Barbara Sikurunza's website used to include a web page entitled Clips with an entry dated November 21, 2001 which referred to a video clip from the WTC video and states that, this bit of video caused quite a little controversy and extensive investigation by alien encounter enthusiasts. This helicopter ride is hardly a fond memory for me. I was sick to my stomach from all the weaving and dodging. The view, however, was unspeakably spectacular. Everywhere and anywhere I go in the city, in it and above it, I'm always a tourist and somehow I'm always right at home. Looking back, was it only a year ago? It all seems unreal. Like phantom limb syndrome, my skyline shows me shadow towers in my mind. In a post on her blog on October 1, 2003, Barbara Sikurunza wrote, "It seems that in the passion for proof and truth, many are overlooking the obvious." She stated the facts in words of one syllable, "I'm an actor. It's a commercial. The ship is CGI, not UFO." Barbara Sikurunza's husband, Chris Stein, co-founder and guitarist of the new wave band Blondie, also referred a message on his blog in 2003 to his wife's appearance in the relevant advertisement stating that Barbara is the person in the helicopter but she was just pointing at empty sky and the UFO images were put in later. The vapor trail formed by the UFO as it flies upwards is similar to the Sci-Fi Channel's logo. Isaac Coy. Perhaps the most remarkable, but least discussed, aspect of the Sci-Fi Channel CGI video is that the so-called UFO or fuselage appears in the same floor slab position as the jet nose out photos of the actual 9/11 events. Was it a coincidence? Did unnamed CGI programmers have advanced knowledge of the September 11th/NORAD broadcast? Simon Hytten used the pseudonym Simon Shack, Hytten is Norwegian for hut or cabin, hence shack, to distribute his 2008 controversial video analysis of 9/11 titled September Clues. His critics dismissed him as a disinfo artist. Simon Shack said that two shots of the same scene, NBC footage, were different. One with city and skyline and one where it seems the city was edited and cut out of the picture. Hytten's analysis also revealed what he called a silver disc, or the ball, a large 40-foot UFO-shaped ball floating across millions of TV screens instead of what should have been a 747. According to Andrew Johnson, co-author of 9/11, Finding the Truth, 2010, founded on the research and evidence compiled by Dr. Judy Wood, it was not a faked video of a CGI plane, but instead it was a real video of what appears to be a holographic image. The Army radar, in fact, was a special vehicle designed to project a holographic image. As per September Clues, the ball was televised on national television in a live broadcast. One of the interesting things Shack noted is that, as the events unfolded on TV, a number of phone calls were made to various TV stations where witnesses claimed to have seen a plane hitting the tower. Oddly, most if not all of these calls that were aired were from media people, TV producers, their wives, or other staff from TV stations. Some of the callers, like Teresa Renault, seemed to describe events they could not possibly have seen clearly, based on where they said they were when they made the call. This is illustrated in one part of September Clues. Since 2007, I have given out hundreds of copies of September Clues on DVD. Whilst arguments about details are ongoing, I still find parts of the analysis of the plane-related video clips compelling. Despite everything, Shack's research helped to illustrate that real planes could not have crashed at any of the four sites. It also highlighted other oddities, such as a news reporter going to Lax Airport to meet with families and friends that would have been waiting for people to disembark from the hijacked flights, which never made it to Lax Airport. However, when he got there, he found only two people waiting and that the airport was going to be evacuated. Andrew Johnson, Check the Evidence, July 16, 2012. If no plane smashed into the World Trade Center or the Pentagon, what became of all the passengers that went missing? Conspiracy theories say the passengers scheduled to fly on those three jets were instructed to change planes for a connecting flight. That jet, Flight 93, crashed in a Pennsylvania field, killing all the passengers. The World Trade Center and the Pentagon assaults were consequently carried out with CGI, controlled demolitions, and maybe a missile, since it was too risky to hinge the false flag plan on immigrant amateur pilots that could fall short or completely miss their targets. In 1962, the Joint Chiefs of Staff proposed Operation Northwoods to commit acts of terrorism against American civilians and then blame it on the Cuban government. The proposals recommended hijackings and bombings followed by the staging of phony evidence to justify a war against Cuba. The proposals were sensibly rejected by the Kennedy administration. Donald Trump doubted NATO counterterrorism efforts. Historian Karina Urbach said Edward VIII was a Nazi sympathizer who wanted Britain to be bombed into submission by Hitler. In 2015, records issued to Kommandostelle S were found proving the Nazis killed thousands of Germans by bombing their own cities. The V-2 rockets, the V standing for Vergeltungswaffe, or vengeance weapon, were fired at London and the southeast of England, as well as targets on mainland Europe, killing over 7,000 people. Writing for the Daily Mail, Ted Thornhill said the documents show also that Hitler fired V-2 rockets from a test center in what was then Pomerania into surrounding cities, killing his own people. Between 1940 and 1979, the UK Ministry of Defence turned large parts of Britain into a giant laboratory to conduct a series of secret germ warfare tests on the public. Russian President Vladimir Putin said that a Syrian chemical attack was a false flag. Novichok nerve agent hits would incite Cold War II. To add to the September 11th NORAD uncertainties, it was disclosed that the U.S. Army had embedded active duty PSYOPs, psychological operations, soldiers at television stations. Journalist Amy Goodman raised concerns about press intimidation. Shortly before his 2012 death at age 43, journalist Andrew Breitbart accused John Podesta of underage sex abuse. U.S. President Donald Trump called CNN fake news during a White House event in 2017. PSYOPs are missions to convey selected information to audiences to sway their objective reasoning. The U.S. Army has used local television stations in the U.S. as training posts for some of its psychological operations personnel, the upshot has learned. The Army's Training with Industry program is designed to offer career soldiers a chance to pick up skills through internships and fellowships with private businesses. The PSYOP soldiers used WRAL and WTOC to learn broadcasting and communications expertise that they could apply in their mission, as the Army describes it, of influencing the emotions, motives, objective reasoning, and ultimately the behavior of foreign audiences. The upshot has reported that the Marine Corps placed public affairs officers with the Chicago Tribune for several years in order to better understand how to influence and work with the news media, and CNNMoney.com hosted an officer in 2007 and 2008, despite the network's embarrassment over the program in 2000. John Cook, Army embeds active duty PSYOP soldiers at local TV stations, The Upshot, Yahoo, ABC News Network, October 1, 2010. On December 2, 2015, a terrorist attack in San Bernardino, California, killed 14 people and injured 21 at the Inland Regional Center. Two Muslim suspects killed in a police shootout were identified as Syed Rizwan Farouk and Tashfeen Malik. But witnesses insisted there were three shooters. Sally Abdelmageed told CBS News she saw three men dressed in all black, military attire, with vests on. It looked like their skin color was white. They looked like they were athletic build and they appeared to be tall. A second witness, Juan Fernandez, confirmed Abdelmajid's report, saying he also saw three white men in military fatigues who fled in a black Impala or SUV. Attorney David S. Chelsea said Tashfeen Malik was only about 90 pounds, and that she was found handcuffed, lying face down in a truck, shot up. As in earlier terrorist incidents, PSYOPs teams had been training for just such a dismal task, conducting active shooter drills in the area. Was he a Nazi or was he a scientist? Walt Disney presented the dreams of space flight of Wernher von Braun in animated film form. As a technical consultant for Walt Disney, von Braun would join Heinz Haber, a specialist in the emerging field of space medicine, and Willy Ley, a famous rocket historian. Wernher von Braun told Carol Rosen there would be false justifications leading to the deployment of space-based weapons. At that time, von Braun was dying of cancer. Disney personally introduced the first television show, Man in Space, which aired on ABC on March 9, 1955. The objective, he said, was to combine the tools of our trade with the knowledge of the scientists to give a factual picture of the latest plans for man's newest adventure. He later called the show science factual. The show represented something new in its approach to science. But it also relied on Disney's trademark animation techniques. Mike Wright, Marshall Space Flight Center historian, The Disney von Braun Collaboration and Its Influence on Space Exploration, 1993. The last card, according to von Braun's warning to Dr. Rosen, was an extraterrestrial threat. Global arms merchants would spin a false flag event in order to justify the weaponization of space, example Strategic Defense Initiative, also known as Star Wars. In 1987, U.S. President Ronald Reagan suggested a possible threat to humanity as the necessity for nations to get closer. Perhaps we need some outside, universal threat to make us recognize this common bond. I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien threat already among us? What could be more alien to universal aspirations of our peoples than war and the threat of war? Do September 11th video suspicions bear out Wernher von Braun's theory of a false flag event advertised as an extraterrestrial threat? The state of affairs without doubt does appear preposterous when we consider that the top military computer hack of all time occurred on September 11th by a spy looking for evidence of UFO activity. That uncanny last card detail is actually part of the official 9/11 investigations. It will, in all probability, become more noteworthy during the coming years as technology fuels public opinion. Communities will call for more computer-related facts. Perhaps photos of the 9/11 jet nose out anomaly will become as well known as photographer Sam Scheer's memorable 1937 image of the Hindenburg Zeppelin disaster. The Scottish hacker Gary McKinnon was accused of what US prosecutors claimed was the biggest military computer hack of all time. On September 11, 2001, McKinnon hacked into a NORAD command post exercise. He spied on the Pentagon over a 13-month period between February 2001 and March 2002, using the name Solo. U.S. authorities said he deleted critical files from operating systems, rendering a network of computers inoperable during the September 11 terrorist attacks. As a result of McKinnon's actions, America supposedly suffered serious damage on September 11. A British mole, not a Muslim jihadist, hacked the Pentagon on September 11. Australian hacker Julian Assange also once hacked into a NORAD operating system. In 1991, at the age of 20, Julian Assange broke into the master terminal of Nortel, the Canadian telecom company. He was caught and pleaded guilty to 25 charges. Nortel Networks Corporation provides technology for NORAD missile defenses, launch codes, in Canada. Assange was editor of the whistleblower website WikiLeaks, which exposed a 2016 Democratic election scheme to cold-shoulder Bernie Sanders. In 2013, U.S. soldier Bradley Manning was convicted to 35 years in prison for giving classified information to WikiLeaks. In 2017, Obama pardoned Chelsea Manning, who changed gender identity. If hacker Gary McKinnon in fact deleted critical files from NORAD operating systems, perhaps that could explain how a CGI animation overlay may have exceeded its real-time feed by 0.28 seconds. The erased source code files may have created a split-second buffer overrun in the TV news broadcasts and the digitally rendered amateur videos resulting in the strange jet nose-out anomaly. Apparently, this computer security breach so enraged the brass at the Pentagon that the US government is currently seeking to extradite McKinnon from the UK to face charges of computer hacking with a punishment of life in prison. Certainly, this is one way to permanently silence an embarrassing discoverer of forbidden information. L.C. Vincent, Von Braun, Beware Fake Alien Threat from Space, Uncensored Magazine, June 1, 2013. In August 2008, Gary McKinnon was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, a form of autism. When interviewed by BBC Click presenter Spencer Kelly, McKinnon said he had spent 2 years looking for photographic evidence of alien spacecraft and advanced power technology. "I was in search of suppressed technology, laughingly referred to as UFO technology," McKinnon said. "I think it's the biggest kept secret in the world because of its comic value, but it's a very important thing." After McKinnon broke into the Pentagon's computers, he reputedly came up with a picture of something that definitely wasn't man-made. It was above the Earth's hemisphere. It kind of looked like a satellite. It was cigar-shaped and had geodesic domes above, below, to the left, the right, and both ends of it, and although it was a low-resolution picture, it was very close up. This thing was hanging in space, the Earth's hemisphere visible below it, and no rivets, no seams, none of the stuff associated with normal man-made manufacturing. Hacker fears UFO cover-up, BBC News, May 5, 2006. On March 26, 1997, police discovered the bodies of 39 members of a group called HIM, Human Individual Metamorphosis, Higher Source or Heaven's Gate, who had committed suicide in San Diego. The Heaven's Gate website stated, "Welcome to Higher Source, your best source for website design, graphics, and animation." The computer group had produced source code for the US Army. Locals thought they were a bunch of harmless nerds and space cadets whom they described as very conservative. It was later disclosed that Heaven's Gate members had rented an apartment from a person of interest who was connected with the 9/11 hijackers. Wernher von Braun said that a bogus extraterrestrial menace would be invented to justify the weaponization of space. But what if genuine extraterrestrials used that mock exercise as an opportunity to initiate an actual numinous incursion? In a speech to mark the 50th birthday of NASA, the astrophysicist Stephen Hawking said the Earth was unlikely to be the only planet where life had evolved. But Professor Hawking warned that an encounter with extraterrestrials could prove harmful for humanity. You could be infected with a disease to which you have no resistance, Hawking said during his 2008 speech at George Washington University. Novel websites with names like Alien Seeker News and UFO Iconoclast curiously turned up on the internet. Starseeds, known also as Star People, is a New Age belief introduced by Brad Steiger in his 1976 book Gods of Aquarius. The starseeds are individuals who supposedly have originated from another world and brought special skills to Earth. They are reincarnated space beings in human form that are destined to lead humanity. Starseeds or star children are people whose souls spent lifetimes on distant stars and planets before coming to Earth. Starseeds are described as angels, archangels, ascended masters, or souls from other planets, star systems, or universes that were allegedly assigned here or volunteered to incarnate to help assist Earth and humanity with the ascension process. The so-called ascension process will be experienced as a rapture or mode of awakening, most likely based on 1 Corinthians 15, "Behold, I show you a mystery, we shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed, in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, for the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed." In 2008, the Vatican newspaper, El Osservatore Romano, said Jesuit Father José Funes, director of the Vatican Observatory, thought Christians should consider alien life as an extraterrestrial brother. Other Vatican envoys have lately mentioned the legitimacy of alien contact. The Vatican executed Giordano Bruno in 1600 for similar thoughts. A number of workers who sifted through 10 tons of debris from the September 11 attacks reported seeing a female ghost holding a tray of sandwiches. Retired NYPD Lieutenant Frank Mara, author of From Landfill to Hallowed Ground, 2015, said the ghost was African American, dressed in white, in the style of a Red Cross worker during World War II. Mara said he saw the carrying messenger a few times, always from more than 50 yards away. And each time, as he strained to make sense of what he was seeing, the ghostly lady vanished. But you could clearly see it was a person, he said. A retired crime scene detective asked him, "You ever hear the stories about the old Red Cross worker trying to serve sandwiches and coffee out by the sifters? It hit me like a ton of bricks I had put that dormant. And it just reminded me that I remembered seeing her," Mara said. Other cops also witnessed this apparition and other strange things, including shadows and large black masses, claimed Mara, who was the supervisor of the World Trade Center vehicle impound section of the landfill and is the son of a high-ranking NYPD chief. A psychic medium has since explained to him he might have seen a spirit called a soul collector guiding people to the afterlife. Gary Biso, 9/11 Rubble Haunted by Female Ghost, Book, New York Post, March 15, 2015. I'm guided by a signal in the heavens. I'm guided by this birthmark on my skin. I'm guided by the beauty of our weapons. First we take Manhattan, then we take Berlin. Leonard Cohen, First We Take Manhattan, 1987. In recent years, high-ranking government officials have spoken out on the extraterrestrial subject. U.S. presidential advisor John Podesta and astronaut Edgar Mitchell discussed the government's knowledge of extraterrestrial life in 2014 emails disclosed by WikiLeaks. JFK requested UFO information from the CIA 10 days before his assassination. Physicist Stanton T. Friedman said UFO suppression, since the Roswell 1947 incident, comes from a committee called Majestic 12. It was alleged to be a secret commission of scientists, military leaders, and government officials. Other rumors identified it with the British Royal Establishment and the Bavarian Illuminati. MJ-12 is tasked with influencing, and if possible, managing, the world's intelligence organizations. John Greenewald of Black Vault Chase destroyed FBI files for members of Majestic 12. The Majestic Council of the 12, more commonly called Majestic 12 or MJ-12, and also known as those who rule in majesty, the 12 and they who rule the world in majesty, is a secretive group of people conspiring to control the world. Majestic 12 is a division of the Illuminati focused on controlling technology and communications. Majestic 12, Deus Ex Wiki. In 2015, the actress Dame Helen Mirren, who played the role of Queen Elizabeth II in an award-winning movie, said the royals are like aliens for living such bizarre lives. The world they live in is so beyond our understanding. Winston Churchill considered aliens in a newly discovered 1939 essay. Former Canadian Defense Minister Paul Hellier was a featured speaker at so-called UFO conferences. In an interview on Russian TV, Hellier made a series of pronouncements about aliens which grew increasingly outlandish and sounded closer to the plot of Star Trek than what is officially known about ETS, our future as a species, and here I mean all of the species in the world, is potentially at risk if we don't figure what's going on and work together to try and make life more amenable for all of us, and to work with our neighbors from other planets as well. David McCormick, aliens already walk among us and are refusing to share their technology until we change our warring and polluting ways, claims former Canadian Defense Minister, Daily Mail, January 8, 2014. In 2017, California Congressman Dana Rohrabacher asked scientists from NASA if aliens once occupied the planet Mars. Several astronauts had reported sightings of unidentified flying objects while in space that they could not account for at the time. On December 14, 1994, almost the entire police force of Trumbull County, Ohio was involved in a frantic UFO chase. That episode became a ufological classic. Former U.S. Congress and Pentagon consultant Timothy Good claimed that U.S. President Dwight D. Eisenhower met with aliens at a base in New Mexico in the 1950s. Some critics have suggested that the so-called aliens that gathered around Eisenhower were actually escapee Nazi scientists secretly transferred into America through Operation Paperclip. Philip Schneider was an American who claimed to be a geologist and structural engineer. He said he was involved in the construction of deep underground bases. Schneider allegedly helped hollow out more than a dozen deep underground military bases in the United States. He said that his father was ex-German Captain Otto Oscar Schneider, a covert agent with the Philadelphia Experiment. Philip Schneider revealed a photo of an extraterrestrial he said was Valiant Thor, a benevolent alien from Venus. Previous photos of Val Thor resembled a young Wernher von Braun. But the photograph that Schneider displayed appeared to show another person or an assumed blonde shapeshifter. Philip Schneider claimed that in 1979 he was involved in a firefight with reptilian aliens encountered in the Dulce underground military base of New Mexico. 66 Secret Service agents, FBI, Black Berets, and the like, died in that firefight, according to Schneider, who said he was wounded in the chest and lost three fingers in the battle, he had missing fingers on his left hand. Schneider claimed that so-called black projects sidestepped the authority of Congress and that their black budget is roughly $1.3 trillion every 2 years' earnings from illegal drug sales, human trafficking, and other criminal activities sponsored by rogue elements of the CIA. Philip Schneider was found dead in January 1996. Due to what appeared to be an execution-style murder. The coroner's report determined that a stroke was the cause of his death. But a cord was tightly wound around the neck of Schneider's body. So, the cause of death was changed to suicide. Schneider's wife said his notes and lecture materials were missing. His critics said he was a self-amputating psychopath. Few figures in the history of technology provoke a reaction as quickly as Wernher von Braun. The rocket scientist was a card-carrying Nazi who built the world's first ballistic missile with slave labor from concentration camps. As the war wound down, he surrendered to the Americans and took his rocket-building team and talents to the United States. Eventually, he became a leader in the American space program, building the rocket, the Saturn V, that carried Apollo 11 to the moon. Alexis C. Madrigal, remembering the Nazi scientist who built the rockets for Apollo, The Atlantic, March 23, 2012. A series of articles appeared in Collier's magazine between 1952 and 1954 that showed off the space exploration plans of German rocket engineer Wernher von Braun. In 1954, Walt Disney premiered an episode of his hour-long weekly television show, Disneyland, called Man in Space, centered on the space exploration articles featured in Collier's magazine. Disney asked von Braun to help adapt the articles into a TV show, which would in turn serve as the basis for Disneyland's Tomorrowland, a section of Disney's new theme park in Southern California. With the help of von Braun, rocket expert Willie Ley, and several others, Tomorrowland became a space of acting out the possibilities of a future in space exploration. It even featured a scale model rocket to the moon. Disney's Tomorrowland, with its beginnings as a documentary television show and intention with Frontierland, paralleled the way in which the nostalgia for the frontier slowly became faith in the future in the American imagination. Catherine L. Newell, The Strange Case of Dr. von Braun and Mr. Disney, Frontierland, Tomorrowland, and America's Final Frontier, Journal of Religion and Popular Culture, Volume 25, Number 3, Fall 2013. In 2015, the Central Intelligence Agency admitted that it was responsible for at least half of reported UFO sightings in the middle of the last century due to its secret, high-altitude reconnaissance flights. The 1950s and 60s was an intense period when a number of Americans reported UFO sightings and alien visitations. These sensational events lent cinematic credence to a number of Hollywood space blockbusters, including Steven Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind and E.T., and George Lucas's Star Wars. Now it appears the unidentified flying objects were more fact than fantasy, while the mind behind them was not quite alien. The CIA took to social media to claim responsibility for at least half of UFO sightings in the 1950s and 60s. Reports of unusual activity in the skies in the 50s? It was us, the agency tweeted, while acknowledging the section on UFOs attracted the most attention to its website in 2014. The CIA tweet linked to a heavily redacted 272-page document, entitled The CIA and the U-2 Program, 1954-1974, that described reconnaissance missions at altitudes in excess of 60,000 feet that sparked speculation on the ground. High-altitude testing of the U-2 soon led to an unexpected side effect: a tremendous increase in reports of unidentified flying objects, UFOs, the 1998 report noted. The CIA said that many of the people who reported UFO sightings around this time were commercial pilots, who caught occasional glimpses of the high-altitude aircraft while flying at considerably lower altitudes. The silver wings of the U-2 spy planes would catch and reflect the rays of the sun and appear to the airliner pilot, 40,000 feet below, to be fiery objects, it revealed. At this time, no one believed manned flight was possible above 60,000 feet, so no one expected to see an object so high in the sky. On May 1, 1960, an American U-2C spy plane, piloted by Gary Powers, was shot down in Russia's Urals region by surface-to-air missiles. The sensational incident was to be a major embarrassment for U.S. President Dwight D. Eisenhower, who was forced to admit that the U.S. had engaged in secret espionage activities. Powers parachuted safely from the aircraft and was convicted of espionage against the Soviet Union, but was released in a prisoner swap with U.S. officials in February 1962. It was us. CIA fesses up on UFO sightings in 1950-60s, RT News, January 2, 2015. In 2016, European Commission Chief Jean-Claude Juncker unexpectedly said he had heard from the leaders of other planets. EU News, 2016, video clips of the EU boss in a Brexit debate show Juncker saying he had ties to other planets over the future of Europe. On February 6, 2018, SpaceX CEO Elon Musk, who said aliens might live among us, launched a midnight cherry Tesla Roadster car playing Space Oddity into an orbit around the Sunday. Rumors said it was the space burial of David Bowie's ashes. In 2012, NASA physicist Harold White revealed that he and a team were working on a blueprint for a faster-than-light ship. Using something known as an Alcubierre drive, named after a Mexican theoretical physicist of the same name, Dr. White said it is possible to bend space-time, and cover large distances almost instantly. The Alcubierre warp drive stretches out space-time in a wave. The wave causes the structure of space in front of the spacecraft to contract, and the space behind it to expand. The ship can ride the wave to accelerate to high speeds and time travel. An Alcubierre warp drive would involve a football-shaped spacecraft attached to a large ring encircling it. In 2014, Dr. White revealed how a real spacecraft dubbed the ISS Enterprise could travel almost anywhere in a tiny fraction of the time it would take a conventional spacecraft, theoretically allowing faster-than-light travel. The project had an overall goal of achieving manned interstellar travel by 2112. It has been shown that it is theoretically possible to create a continuously propulsive effect by the juxtaposition of negative and positive mass, and that such a scheme does not violate conservation of momentum or energy. Warp drive, when? Glenn Research Center, NASA, 2009. The puzzling life story of the so-called alien Valiant Thor began with Harley Andrew Byrd, nephew to the late Rear Admiral Richard E. Byrd of the U.S. Navy. Harley said he had met the Queen of England several times at the airport, since these were some of the duties he performed as a young officer in the Navy. After carrying the two-star flag at the funeral of his late uncle, Harley said he was granted a top-secret clearance for Project Blue Book after an extensive six-month background check. Several unidentified flying objects had been photographed over Washington, D.C. from July 12 to July 29, 1952. In mid-March, 1957, we received an urgent message from the Alexandria Police Department. The message indicated that two of their on-duty police officers had picked up an alien who had landed some 14 miles south of Pentagon Boulevard, and the occupant was transported to the Pentagon to meet with the Under Secretary of Defense and then shuttled underground to meet with President Eisenhower and Vice President Richard Nixon. The meeting lasted for nearly an hour and then, the alien visitor was put on VIP status and was shuttled back to the Pentagon, where he spent the night in the Army reception office on the first floor near the concourse. This alien's name was Valiant Thor. Harley Andrew Byrd believed that the manifestation of Valiant Thor was possibly the earliest documented landing of a human-type alien by military officials. Valiant Thor allegedly contacted an individual in the U.S. Pentagon who was an advocate of the UFO alien situation. Nancy Warren in turn contacted a Christian minister, who was also a private investigator and theologian, a Dr. Frank E. Stranges, who then met with this individual. Dr. Stranges had been a guest speaker at the National Evangelistic Center for 2 weeks. The Valiant Thor landing, 002741-57, Room 4D717, Project Blue Book, Harley Andrew Byrd, nephew to the late Rear Admiral Richard R. E. Byrd, United States Navy. Dr. Frank E. Stranges, a minister, continued the report, "I left that meeting astounded, greatly encouraged, and yet with a heavy heart, not knowing what the future would hold. I began to wonder who would believe me if I ever told of this strange encounter with a man from another planet. I first considered not repeating this extraordinary story, but the more I thought about it, the more I prayed about it, the more I felt that it would bring a great blessing to those who would hear and read it." Val's instructions were to leave Washington, D.C., no later than March 16, 1960. That meant that there were less than 3 months during which he could confer with scientists, politicians, military men, and the like. All missed his point entirely. They were all filled with self-ambition and cared little for the pressing needs of mankind. His efforts to bring about an end to the sickness and disease that plagued this planet were met with pathetic refusal. He was told over and over that his presence and his ideas were a threat to the political and economic structure. Certain religious leaders were also fearful of losing a grip on the people in the event that his presence was admitted on an official level. It was very disheartening that the administration failed to lay hold of such information that would change the course of human activities for the good, because of economic reasons. His last meeting with the president did not reap any lasting results. He wanted to let the world know of Val's proposed plan, but the Secretary of Defense, the head of the Central Intelligence Agency and the military chiefs of staff were opposed to his suggestion. The president attempted to effect a joint meeting before the General Assembly of the United Nations. But this plan too was rejected. He was informed that the UN would receive a special press release in the form of a memorandum to the Secretary General no later than February 7, 1966. These leaders of the US government argued long into the night, fearing that if the people of this nation learned of the plan Val was offering, they might choose to follow him instead of them. Dr. Frank E. Strange's, Ph.D., Stranger at the Pentagon, 1967. Next to take up the story was Philip Schneider, some call him a UFO whistleblower, others scorn him. Whichever the case, Phil Schneider aroused controversy with his claims about aliens, in particular with what he said about someone called Valiant Thor. Valiant Thor looks human, but he has some key physiological differences and it's claimed he's from Venus. He allegedly worked for the US government for some time in the 1950s. At least this is the story told by Schneider, a geologist and engineer who said he had level 1 security clearance in secret government projects. He claimed to have helped build underground military bases and worked at the famed Area 51 base. Tara McIsaac, space alien worked for US government. Look back at Curious Story of Phil Schneider, Epoch Times, April 8, 2014. In 2018, astrobiologists said the clouds of Venus could host extraterrestrial life forms. In 2011, the FBI launched an online document archive they call the Vault, including a memo written by Agent Guy Hoddle, of the Washington Field Office, to the FBI director on March 22, 1950, concerning flying saucers. A declassified 1957 FBI file reported a rumor that Nikola Tesla was brought to Earth from Venus. In 2016, the official website of the CIA posted a remarkable news article titled How to Investigate a Flying Saucer. In the 1970s, Uri Geller rose to fame by staring at spoons and apparently bending them with his psychic powers. But while he was amusing TV audiences, did he have an even more amazing career, working as a spy for the CIA and Mossad? A BBC documentary declared that Geller, Uri Geller Freud, related to Sigmund Freud, was recruited to work with US intelligence agencies to help in a psychic arms race with the USSR during the Cold War. The Secret Life of Uri Geller Psychic Spy. 2013, by Vikram Jayanti, said Geller used his powers against Russia, including erasing Soviet floppy disks and changing the mind of an unnamed Russian leader in order to convince him to sign a nuclear arms reduction treaty, The Independent reported. Uri has a controversial reputation. A lot of people think he is a fraud, a lot of people think he is a trickster and makes things up, but at the same time he has a huge following and a history of doing things that nobody can explain, Jayanti said of his Zelig-like subject. Sometimes you wonder whether Uri's entire public career has actually been a front for his shadow world activities. Geller came to the attention of the Americans in the 1970s, during the Carter-Mondale's administration. When Jimmy Carter was elected president, one of the first things he did was to have Uri Geller give him a four-hour briefing on the Soviet psychic threat, Jayanti told The Independent. America didn't want a psychic gap, and Uri was the go-to guy about these things. In early 2017, the CIA released declassified Stargate records of 1973 testing on Uri Geller. Where did Geller's psychic powers come from? Andrija Puharik had worked on and off for the US military, CIA and NASA since the 1940s. Puharik met Geller in Israel in late 1971 and for 2 years they were involved in a convincing and unambiguous manner with an evident non-human intelligence. What they picked up was an orbiting computer intelligence that called itself Spectra, though actually Spectra was the name of the spacecraft on which the intelligence was traveling. Sometimes the voices manifested through Yuri, sometimes out of thin air, but more often than not they appeared live on tape. As a machine, Spectra found it easiest to communicate via other machines' tape recorders, radios, telephones, televisions, etc. During the 2 years of communication in Israel and the USA, objects would vanish and reappear, tapes would record and delete themselves spontaneously, clocks started and stopped, and the voices guided Yuri, Puharik, and their accomplices through a bewildering series of visions, synchronicities, and UFO encounters. Geller had always claimed that his own powers were extraterrestrial in origin, unlocked during a UFO entity encounter he had as a child. Simon Cowell said Puharik thought that Geller was not of this world. Geller's magician opponent James Randi built stage props for rock singer Alice Cooper. Alice Cooper, Vince Fenier, said that becoming a Christian saved him from addiction. Uri Geller said he believed he was on a mission to prepare the world for the formal appearance on Earth of extraterrestrial life forms. His Beatles friend John Lennon openly admitted in interviews to have seen a UFO hovering over his New York City apartment building August 23, 1974, 6 years before his death in 1980. Lennon reportedly said, "About 6 months ago, I was asleep in my bed, with Yoko, at home, in the Dakota building. And suddenly, there was this blazing light round the door. I leaped out of bed, and pulled open the door. There were these four people out there. The visitors left a small egg-shaped object behind." Geller later revealed, "There is an egg-like object in my pocket. It was given to me by John Lennon." John started talking about UFOs. He said he believed life existed on other planets, that it had visited us, that maybe it was observing us right now. Famous psychic spy and alien agent. UFO Digest, June 23, 2013. In 1968, two adaptations of an alien hypothesis emerged that pondered the chance of advanced extraterrestrial beings having visited the Earth in the distant past, thereby initiating the foundations of religion. The Swiss author Erich von Däniken is sometimes called the father of the ancient astronaut theory. His book, Chariots of the Gods, popularized the argument that ancient aliens interacted with primitive humans. Director of von Däniken's Center for Ancient Astronaut Research was the Swiss-born Greek writer and television presenter Giorgio Tsoukalos, seen on History Channel's Ancient Aliens. The American Presbyterian minister Reverend Barry Downing also investigated the connection between UFOs and religious principles. His book, The Bible and Flying Saucers, was a groundbreaking hypothesis on the biblical perspective of the UFO phenomenon. The von Däniken theory suggests that our primitive ancestors mistook alien visitors for gods and produced supernatural belief systems around their encounters. Reverend Downing, on the other hand, said that certain so-called aliens are in fact God's angels or divine messengers sent to Earth, including perhaps Jesus himself. The ancient astronaut theory in general supposes that alien visitors were advanced mortals that evolved by Darwinist natural selection, and there need be no creator. Bible ufology, in contrast, states that some celestial visitors are eternal beings created by God, who might be at war in space with aggressive alien entities. Jim Cunningham, author of the book, The Strong Delusion, 2005, said, "Just because we may be now able to understand the technical means of angels past and present should not be construed as an attempt to change the plan of God in any way. The current interest in UFOs may be setting us up for great deception. By strict definition, a god is nothing other than an immortal being. All the way through the timeline of anthropology there have been animal gods, humanoid gods, spirit gods, and totem gods. In nearly every case, they were considered to be everlasting. The gods could experience death, pain, and human passion, but death could not hold them. Not all gods were good or caring to mankind. A universal basis of the ancient gods was a generational shift or handing down of authority from father to son. In certain cases, humans could receive the reward of immortality and become gods or mate with them." The American scientist and singularity movement futurist Ray Kurzweil claimed that humans could become immortal in a few decades through nanotechnology capable of replacing our vital organs. The technological singularity is a term used by the science fiction author Werner Vinge. It refers to the creation of smarter-than-human computers that develop their own intellect. Transhumanists advocated the improvement of human capacities through advanced technology. Oddly, the ancient gods were not described as indestructible supermen that a childish imagination might impulsively bring into play. Instead, the gods at times suffered and died, but were promptly mended back together or resurrected, in accordance with Kurzweil's claims that vital organs would be regenerated in a post-human world. If members of an alien civilization have indeed become immortal through advanced technology, they are, by strict definition, nothing other than gods. The von Däniken hypothesis proposes that extraterrestrial visitors taught primitive humans the study of astronomy, geometry, and even monolith construction. But why couldn't they teach us the difference between imaginary gods and living aliens? Perhaps they deservingly wanted to be treated as gods or angels, depicting humanity's immortal future. The Beast was the wickedest man in the world. He dealt in black magic and was an opponent of Judeo-Christianity. Doing what he wanted and pleasing the flesh, the Beast established an occult connection between false religions and Satan. Yet something troubled him greatly every so often. His magical energies alluded to the Tower of Babel and Old Testament. But the Beast could not figure out why in the Book of Job Satan was among the sons of God. What did that stand for? Why did Corinthians claim Jesus became sin? Did he become Satan on the cross? Was his dead body the cheater of those who denied the resurrection? Why did Jesus go to hell for 3 days? Was hell not the dominion of Satan? If Satan was among the sons of God, why were Christians not terrified? The Beast had prayed to the Illuminati deities of Lucifer. He had served false gods. Yet something distressed him. Had he worshipped a false Satan? On a cool and misty morning north of the Nile, as I sat near the harbor of an ancient isle, he walked by the waterfront and watched me for a while. The man in black arrived, looking absolutely normal, at twilight's top part. His attire was dark and formal, exclusively ported by a man with a card. His appearance was that of a wealthy young regent, a minister bridegroom or government agent. Embedded in the flagstone between us was a seal, the cap of an old well water pipe wheel. From where I sat, a tarnished gear, the Adam came to mind. I could, his voice in English here, striding a space behind, tell me the flattened sphere design, of the seal, was the universe. I thought of the heavens, vast and diverse, the brilliance of stars, the comets glowing hail. But I also wondered why the Adam did entail world-class weapons of mass destruction scale. A dictator's raiment, etched with bombs, in the cracks of broken pavement. As I thought, the stranger moved to the edge of the enclavement. He then, standing by a church flagpole, introduced himself as Granite Heir of Man's Failed Cultural Goal, beneficiary of a planet sired by Hitler's disclaimed soul. I was suspect of the man's stealth. What was his business, arriving like a thief, at this unexpected hour of the morning? I considered my own health and vainly sought relief from his sudden waterfront warning. But the stranger forestalled me, pacing closer to my chair. With 6 fingers pointed my way, he waved his fists like claws in the air, and assumed the upright stance of a lion appointed to slay.